Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all, and welcome to this what looks to be a fascinating discussion around fuel retail in South Africa, brought to you by Nedbank Commercial Banking. And we're going to be just talking about the fact that the retail fuel sector has had an unpredictable, you know, last couple of years, with factors such as declining fuel demand and load shedding that has been thwarting some of the growth effort. Just how sustainable is the fuel retail sector? This discussion will delve into the challenges facing the sector and the opportunities fuel retailers can embrace to thrive going forward. And then we're also going to be looking at some of the dramatic shifts experienced in 2020, such as the global economic slowdown and unprecedented move towards working from home, acceleration in the migration to online shopping channels, and soaring fuel prices impacting mobility, which in turn have negatively affected fuel sales, and you know, provide a preview of the likely impact of the energy transition in years to come. But just to talk about, you know, where some of the glimmers of hope are in the sector and what the data is telling us. To help us to unpack all that, we are joined by Karen Keelock, who is the national head of retail sales over at Nedbank Commercial Banking, together with Andrea Ellens, who is a retail expert over at Trade Intelligence. Ladies, greetings to you today.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us today.
Karen, maybe I'll start with you. There's been a lot of data, a lot of numbers out there. And, you know, from one of the things that I have picked up is that depending on what source, you know, you're using, the data that I have in front of me is that, you know, there has been a decline in income from retail sales. Retail fuel sales is expected to be offset by, you know, gains in non-fuel retail, all of these things. But there has been, you know, a decline around the world when it comes to at least the fuel sales. What's happening in the South African market? Obviously, we've got the global picture, but what's actually happening, and are we seeing the same trend in South Africa?
Absolutely. I think the decline is both globally and locally, and these can be propelled by a number of reasons. First of all, consumer drivers are no longer, many of us are still working from home, but what we are starting to see is that a lot of people are starting to go back into the corporate world, but that has certainly stopped the sales of fuel. What we've also started seeing is the consumers are now starting to shop online. So, and this was actually came into effect when COVID-19 came into play. So many partnerships were actually created, driven by COVID. And with this increase now in work in demand, we're starting to see people working more longer hours, which means more people are actually shopping online. Another thing that has also come into play is that we're starting to see that consumers have started to show more efficiencies when they do drive. For example, vehicles that they're purchasing now are becoming more advanced in engine and transmission and hybrid technology around around the car industry and the automobile industry. And then we're also starting to see now that people are taking more relevance and more understanding around carbon emissions. So people are reducing their energy consumption and using renewable energy sources such as solar panels. So that's also driving the sales of fuel. Another factor that also is starting to come into play is the adoption of new vehicles. So we're certainly seeing where people are becoming more fuel efficient, like hybrids, and obviously don't use fuel, but more importantly, electric cars are going to start coming into play. What we also now starting to also know, and we all know this, South African consumers are under pressure. There is no substitute for fuel. And the more economical consumption is the only ways for consumers to actually stop spending. to limit the expense of fuel, consumers are now starting to actually do carpooling. They're starting to obviously plan better trips, which again, you're going to see the drop in sales of fuel. So all of these factors have actually consumed the fuel sales drop both nationally and globally. What we also starting to see is fuel margin, as we know, is legislated. So fuel retailing typically operates with very low margins, high costs and associated risk. So there's definitely an increase in reliance on adjacent revenues to support profitability for fuel retailers.
Okay. It's very interesting, you know, all of the different points that you're bringing in. And Andrea, I wanted to maybe bring you in here because as Karen is talking, I was wondering to myself, like, is this really what's going on? Because as a driver myself and someone who sits in traffic, right, I'm thinking that the fuel stations are making a killing out there, one. And two, because the price of fuel is where it is now, right? I hearken back to the good old days. I call them the good old days of the pandemic when fuel was only 12 rand a liter for a brief period of time. I think that was one of the few positives that I can take out of the pandemic. But now fuel is crazy. We see all of these cars on the road. But it just feels like a little bit of a disconnect. I'm feeling like the reality I'm seeing stuck in traffic versus the data that you guys are presenting feels a little bit different.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that is interesting is I'd like to ask you the question, have a guess. How many times do you think an average South African visits a forecourt, like a fuel station?
A fuel station. Wow. Okay. Fine.
I'm going to ask a month. Yeah. How often do you visit?
Okay. For myself, it's once a week because I'm fueling at least once a week.
Okay. But just on average, how often do you think the average South African visits a forecourt?
Sure. I think I'm just going to go with, I've got a little bit of a formula in my head now. I think it would be once a week for fuel. But maybe you multiply that maybe two or three times because if people are like me, I like going to the convenience stores and, you know, stuff like that. So that's how I would answer that question.
Okay. So according to Lightstone, who are the property company that also tracks mobility of people visiting forecourts, the average South African visits a forecourt 10 times a month.
Wow.
Okay. So – and that is not to fill up with fuel, all right? So you've got to look at that forecourt as an ecosystem. And yes, the fuel sales are down in South Africa over the last 5 years. We're down 7.6%. What's interesting, though, is two factors. One is we've got more forecourts in South Africa. Of those 4,600 that we've counted, only 3,000 have forecourt convenience stores.
Okay.
But that has increased significantly over the last 5 years. So we've seen a massive growth of those convenience and ecosystems. So we talk about quick service restaurants. We talk about the fact that you can draw cash, the fact that you can do a variety of activities at that forecourt. So South Africans are definitely visiting forecourts because they are convenient. They're close to home. Remember that also, you know, that corner cafe that we used to go to when we were kids, they're not really around as much anymore. Yeah, a lot of those have closed down. So the forecourt has filled a gap in that space. And I think what's also interesting is that the convenience store growth, like sales growth, has increased as a space. So for retailing, it's still a growth area. So if you look at the growth numbers, in 2023, convenience sales grew by 8.5%, which was slightly below inflation. But in 2022, it grew at 14%, which was ahead of inflation. So for the forecourt owner, they're seeing declining fuel sales, but they're seeing increasing convenience food sales. So that's where they're seeing more margin. So it's a real tricky balancing act for the owner of that total forecourt.
Maybe what we can, you know, maybe touch on a little bit is when it comes to that balance that Andrea is talking about around the profitability piece, right? Because you've got a lever, you know, that has been, it's your draw, right? So you'd think that is the draw. The fuel piece, but now it's more the convenience aspect, you know. Instead of, I can speak for myself, I prefer to go to certain fuel stations in my area to get goods because it's less,
it's convenient.
Yes.
Exactly.
I was about to say it's less admin than going to the proper proper access to the parking, all that.
It's a minute or two away from your home.
Yes. Yeah. So when it comes to something like that, and I guess striking the balance between you've got declining sales for fuel on one side, but you're increasing your convenience shop, you know, stores on the other side. One of the things that I'm wondering is, from an ecosystem point of view, what are you guys seeing in this space? Karen, maybe I'll start with you on this one to say, is it just your normal retail, you know, type of activity that's driving, you know, those sales? Is it, I've seen a couple of pharmacy operations now. We see ice. We see all of these things that are getting people there. Like, well, what's getting people to go there?
As we said, it's about convenience. So if a forecourt can now become that destination of choice for shopping. Mm. So it's not just about me coming through on the forecourt, filling up with fuel. It's about me going into that store. Do I want to get my quick groceries, milk, bread, etc.? But now I'm obviously saying, oh, let me get my QSR, for example, or takeaways. Mm. At the same time, what we're starting to see now on many forecourts is the growth when it comes to laundromats. As you mentioned, pharmaceutical is going to start entering into the market onto forecourts. Mm. You've already got your car washes on many of these stations. So it actually started with car washes as an extra service on your forecourts. Yes. Now we're starting to see that extreme at that next level. So a forecourt in itself will become a mini shopping center, as I said, a destination of choice. But it's also about, for example, now EV comes into play, just to bring that into perspective. If you think about it, an EV for charging of a vehicle can take up to 30 minutes, whereas now I come in, fill up, I'm out within 10 minutes, and that's doing my shopping plus filling up my car. Whereas when EV does come in, it may take 30 minutes to charge that vehicle. So what does that mean? Now I've got to cater for that individual. Mm. So I want to be catered. So have I got full Wi-Fi to be able to sit there, have a bite to eat, watch my kids playing in a mini playground type of area? There's all that the poor operator nowadays has actually got to think about. But it's not that easy. We must bear in mind, almost 80% of your forecourts out there, the actual operator doesn't own the land. The land is actually owned by the oil co. Mm. So it's, we want to do these things. These operators want to do the expansions of their forecourts, but they actually have to actually go to the oil co to get permission. Now, are the oil co's going to come to the party and start investing money into these types of infrastructure? You can't just go to a, give an example, a Wimpy or part of Famous Brands Group, sign up a franchise agreement and say, I'm going to put a Wimpy onto my forecourt. No, you need to actually go to your brand, so be it that you've got an Engen or a BP or Caltex or a Sasol or Shell, and actually get permission to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. Because you can't make those type of decisions. You don't actually own the land.
Yes.
So that's where sometimes we don't move, I believe, we don't move quick enough when it comes to the expansion of these forecourts. Yes, the operators, what we call dodo sites, dealer-owned, dealer-operated, they own the land. It's easy for them to do negotiations with your various brands out there and bring those service offerings onto a site.
All right. I'm going to come back to this point because I think it's a very key one. But one of the things that I was reflecting on as we're talking is when my family really started taking trips on the South African highways, I remember distinctly, I was probably grade 5, a long, long, long time ago.
We all stopped at Harry Smith and we all went for our Wimpy Burgers.
Right.
And it still happens today.
Exactly. And what I wanted to check is there a way to, whatever you might have, to distinguish between some of the forecourts that we see along the highways versus the ones that we see in town, right? Are any of them, is one better than the other? And I'm only asking that because the hub factor that Karen was talking about, is that's where I first saw it in my mind, because when you go to one of those stops along the highway, you have so much going on in that one place. There can be a truck stop, there can be even a motel, there can be a quick service restaurant, there can be a convenience store, there's so much, there can be a kid's playground, there's so much going on in a lot of those places. So just keen to understand, is there a difference, you know?
So I think there are a number of different factors. I mean, I think it's also space in the city and the demand for those services and what the shopper or the consumer is wanting at those different spaces. But I was just going to build on what Karen was talking about, is that we at Trade Intelligence go out and ask shoppers, what are they looking for at a forecourt? And actually, the first thing, 74% of shoppers are looking for the shop.
Yeah.
Okay. The next thing is actually takeaways. So 68% of people are going to a convenience store for a restaurant, a quick service restaurant. And actually the one that they love the most is Chicken Licken, followed by Debonairs and other ones. So gotta love South Africa. We love chicken.
Yeah.
And then it's fuel. But actually, when you then strip out and you ask the question a different way, fuel is still the number one reason why you'll go to a forecourt on a frequency basis. So, you know, you said you go to the forecourt four times a month. It's to get fuel. Then it's ATMs and then it's coffee. Coffee comes into play quite a lot. I think, you know, I think also the very savvy forecourt owners, and you will speak to this, are very good at running their business and work out they're going to make more money if they have the coffee and the laundromat. Yeah. And
because you will make more margin on those extra
services.
Coffee, especially one of them. Hence why most forecourts now, you will find coffee is being served.
And then also the coffee brand. So there's actually in our research, we were like asking which brands, and we also asked about points and all this kind of stuff to understand what are those levers that the forecourt guys can play.
Yeah, because I was actually going to ask that question, because speaking for myself, right, I bank with two banks and they have different structures, to Karen's point earlier on, to say that, for example, Engine tends to have Woolies attached to it, and I think Wimpy in some instances, whereas Caltex, which is now Astron, tends to have Fresh Stop, then Seattle Coffee and that type of thing. So it was just, I was just wondering, like, because I know I go to Astron specifically because
you want your Seattle coffee.
Yes, because I want my Seattle coffee.
So 81% of shoppers go with where they get their reward cards. Okay. So the reward card is actually driving the behavior before the brand of fuel, which is very interesting, because I mean, that was what we were looking for in our research. But everybody's fighting on those battles. So we've just done a completely different survey on shopper behavior and reward card data and stuff like that. And we asked this really interesting question. We said, do loyalty programs, do they make you more loyal to that retailer? So we were asking about all Pick and Pay, ShopRite, Checkers, all those ones. And the shopper went, absolutely, they make me more loyal to ShopRite. Then we asked the question slightly differently. So how many reward cards do you have? Turns out they have quite a few in their wallet. And if you look at your wallet, I don't know about you, but I have like at least eight reward cards. Yeah. Actually, the stats say like four reward cards. So they'll go to Checkers and they'll use their Checkers card, and they'll go to Woolies and use that card. But it was interesting that they still feel loyal to the company,
to the brand, to the
retailer that are giving them the card. But it's actually more of a reward card than a loyalty card. Correct. So I think it's the terminology that we use in a way. But it was quite fascinating when you split out consumer behavior and shopper behavior. But reward cards do drive shopping behavior. Sorry if
So I just want to add to that also, operators are very much supportive of their community. So you'll also find many consumers, we actually support our operator in that area that you live, because the operator themselves actually support the community, be it that it's in charity events or
local schools
or whatever. So that also drives the behavior of the shopper onto that particular forecourt.
Yeah.
Is how the operator actually supports their own people within the community.
Now, we could talk, you know, quite at length around something like this, because it is quite fascinating to see what drives, I guess, the push and pull, you know, for people out there. And I think on my side, interestingly enough, it's some of the idiosyncrasies. That's the word I'm going to use, around, life in, we're in Joburg right now. Certain things. So for example, if water's out in the area, that's one of the reasons why I'm visiting, a forecourt. But, outside of water issues, energy, And specifically electricity has tended to be a bit of an issue for South Africans. And I'm just wondering that this uniquely South African phenomenon, how is that being factored into the sustainability of the fuel retail sector, you know, when it comes to load shedding, because we're seeing some shifts in oil company ownership and divestment. What could, you know, that do, positive or negative impact on the fuel retail, you know, franchise?
Yeah, and I think let's take a step back. I can tell you now, when load shedding was really at its peak, our operators, the cost was actually increased almost 77%. So what that means is these guys were spending from 145,000 to 257,000 just to, obviously, to fill up their diesel to keep those forecourts actually running. Because unfortunately, again, I go back to the what I said earlier. If you don't own the site, I can't just go and put solar panels onto my forecourt. I actually need to run a generator. So those generators need to keep those pumps running. And many stations, as you know, in this country are open 24 hours. So we've got to keep the power going. And the reason they're open 24 hours is because you've got the security companies, you've got the SAPS, the police, out there, you know, in the evenings. So these sites have to remain open. So for them to be, they're actually burning their own diesel, and they're not actually making any margins or profits of what they're actually burning through the generators. So that for me was really, it was a horrible, I don't want to use the word horrible, but it was a really, it was a really tough time for these operators when we were in a bad load shedding period. But hopefully, you know, we're out of it at this stage. Hopefully it stays like that. But yeah, we're hoping that oil cos will start coming to the party again, because I do think it's long term, and I do think they still need to invest in solar onto many of their forecourts.
Yeah. I remember I actually had a conversation with the chairman of one of the big international oil companies that operates in South Africa. And I remember it was just, you know, an off the cuff question to say, well, you guys have buckets of oil underneath all of these fuel stations. Surely it can't be that hard for you guys to keep the lights on during load shedding. And he was like, guys, it's not as easy as you think. And he spoke about the complexity of the fact that, yeah, sure, we do own the fuel and there are our fuel stations, but there's also a franchising element. You know, who pays, who takes on that burden, that risk, you know, all of that. So very fascinating. Andrea, anything to add on this one before we end off?
No, I hope, you know, I think the convenience factor of the forecourt will continue to grow. And that's Trade Intelligence view, is that globally, convenience, food, on getting things quick and easily is what shoppers are asking for. And the retailers are definitely investing in convenience food.
All right. So that's where we end off today's discussion. It has really been a great one, underpinned by a couple of data points globally. We're seeing that forecourt value increasing 36% from $22 billion in 2019 and is expected to reach $30 billion by 2030. And we're just going to see how that develops over time. But from the conversation that we're having with Andrea and Karen, it is quite apparent the fact that the fuel retailers are playing a very interesting game right now, where they're balancing declines on the fuel side, but they're seeing increasing margins and increasing sales and increasing demand on the forecourt side. And if you are able to strike that balance correctly, then, you know, it could be quite a good time for yourself, and you can actually help to increase the overall profitability of your location. Also, just chatting about some of the behavioral elements that are pushing people towards convenience stores. An interesting data point is that the average South African is visiting 10 times. I think that was the data point, about 10 times. And, you know, the majority of those are not, you know, related to fuel, sort of showing where we are on that front. And then I think lastly, it was also great just getting into a discussion just around how much loyalty programs and that type of thing is also informing the behavior as to where people go and the types of products that they do get when they do arrive arrive at a convenience stop. So that's been it for this discussion that was brought to you by Nedbank Commercial Banking. In studio, we have Karen Keelock, who is the National Head of Retail Sales at Nedbank Commercial Banking, as well as Andrea Ellens, who is retail expert, over at Trade Intelligence. Team, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.